Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Number 7, leading into the Porcupine Freedom Festival, the 20th Porcupine Freedom Festival. I'm surprised that Fort Fest has existed so long relative to the Porcupine Freedom Festival, right? Like, the 7 to 20 ratio is almost...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a third as young, it's just about, but, like, that's longer than I would have expected. But my first Porcupine Freedom Festival was the same year that Fort Fest started.
That
makes it super easy for me to remember certain things.
Yeah.
I was surprised recently there was an entire year that I came here and then returned to Mississippi that I have no recollection of. I thought that I came here the first year,
yeah,
and then I came here the second year, and on the third year I moved.
Okay.
No. I came here 1 year, then I came here the second year, then I came here the third year, and the fourth year, and then I moved. I moved on the fourth year, not the third. And so I'm like...
You lost a year in there somewhere.
Yeah, and I don't remember it at all. Right, I remember the first year where I slept over there in Agoura Valley at the Muslims for Liberty tent, helping, you know, Will Coley out with stuff. And I remember the second year where I slept further away down here on a campsite that I shared with his mom.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the year after that, but there was another year. And then the year after that, I stayed at the Cabot, and since then I've been staying at the motel here at Rogers Campground.
Right.
But, like, there was another year there that I came here that I don't remember.
Huh.
And that's weird. I know I came here.
Drugs?
I didn't skip it. I mean, I don't even remember driving here, though. I mean, definitely drugs, right? But I don't remember even driving here. And I wasn't on drugs while driving here.
Sure, yeah.
And it's so strange to me. And like, I don't know how it could have happened. I don't know how it could have happened. The first year, I drove Will and his family's van up here. The second year, I don't remember any of this. Because I'm sitting there, I'm like, I remember the first year I came back with Will's mom,
yeah,
and in her truck. I remember that. But how did I get back the year after that? Because I only brought my car here once, and I never
astral
took it
projection.
Back. I mean, how many drugs did I do?
Well,
right? I don't know. And I don't remember, allegedly, right? And I don't remember any of that. Now I'm really surprised because that first year, Will and his family stayed an additional time. They stayed until the fireworks festival
because
they were told that, you know, more people were coming in and they could make more money, and they went canoeing and stuff like that around here with Jessica and some other people. It was a lot of fun, right? Well, it looked like it was a lot of fun. I'd already gone back to Mississippi because I had to go back to work. But anyway, I remember that ride back with his mom. And the following year, I don't know how the hell I got back. I would have said the following year I thought he moved here.
Mm.
But then how did I get back? Because I don't remember any of this.
I have no idea, are you?
I don't either, dude. Like,
I would ask you these questions if they came up, but if you don't know, then I guess it's lost forever.
And I realize we're probably harping on this quite a bit, but like, I've come here 7 years in a row, and I remember like three of them. And it's not because of drugs or anything like that. It's just, I don't know why. And it's confusing and it's perplexing and it's a little bit concerning. But in my defense,
yeah,
it's been a weird 2.5 years. It's 2 years and 3 months. And had a lot on my mind. There's a lot of stuff I don't remember from the last 2 years.
I've
been kind of a blur.
I'm really glad that you're here now to be able to do this. I know the impending, you know, I'm sitting right next to the ticking clock here.
The doomsday clock.
The doomsday clock of Aria goes to prison in 10 days, 22 hours, 30 minutes, and 39 seconds. as of this recording, but I'm glad you're here to do this.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, it's sort of been the tradition, at least since I've been here, that we come to Forkfest and Porkfest, and here you are, and we get to do this show and all that kind of stuff, so I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. And I like being here. It is still bittersweet. It's bittersweet for many reasons, but one of those, again, is because Ian's not here.
Well, and also, too, like, from the selfish perspective, outside of, like, it's important for you to be talking because you're the one going to prison, right, and telling your story. But outside of that, from the selfish, like, I'd have had to learn a whole bunch of stuff about how to, like, do the show to maybe make one go on. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, am I capable? Probably, but... Like, you've saved me a lot of work, so thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we probably wouldn't have bothered. I wasn't sure about bothering this year, because, like, it's not what it used to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much work it's worth doing for the festivals. Like, it's important to be here and to, like, do stuff, but as far as doing the show here every day, that's less important to me, because when you look around, especially once Porkfest is going, there, every other campsite is a podcast, right? And the only way that we really stand out from any of those is because we're also a radio show.
Right.
We happen to be a really big radio show on, like, 200 radios, close to 200. It's like 180 at this point, 185, I think.
Yeah.
But... It's libertarians. You can't throw a rock without hitting a libertarian who has a podcast. And we're not putting on the best expo here, or the best podcast here, right? When it's a little better this year than it was last year, because I put a little bit more thought and work into it this year about where I wanted everything and how I wanted things. But we had discussed last year raising the stakes, right?
Sure, yeah. I remember you, me, and Mark talking about that.
Right, because we got this space. Mark's got plenty of money. It doesn't matter. He's frugal. It's very strange, but he's willing to spend money in bizarre ways, like with building the mobile studio and stuff like that. That, like, okay, I don't know why you spent $80,000 on this, but okay. But so we talked about the possibility of, like, raising our presence here, which probably would have been good. And but as time went on, it became less and less important to me.
Yeah.
And obviously, this is for many reasons, but the main one was just that I'm not sure it would achieve anything, right? The real hangout right now for Free Talk Live, it's not anything in person or anything like that. It's just that we have to put more into the internet part of it than we really have been. And Free Talk Live has been a podcast since podcasts began, right? But our social media presence, in particular, has to be changed. And this is something that Bonnie and I have actively been working on.
It is improving, by the way, recently.
Oh, like it's significantly better than it's ever been. And, like, now Free Talk Live will actually like your stuff and share your stuff and comment, and Free Talk Live posts are getting likes and shares. And, like, Mark was under the impression that we need to hire somebody to come manage our social media, blah, 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 blah. And, like, Mark, the problem here... Mark wants us to have more tools. We need more tools. We need to hire programmers to come in and make new things for us to use.
I'm all for tools, but you have to have an explicit purpose before you go get the tools.
But the problem right here is that, like, we already have countless tools that we're not using.
Yes.
Like, you want to hire someone to program this thing for you to increase our internet presence when you could just have me tweeting for you for free? Right. How about instead of doing any of that, you let me and Bonnie and whoever else wants to, Nikki and some others, just start posting stuff to social media, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And in the few months that it's been going on, it's substantially improved. We've lost a lot of followers, sure, but we lost a lot of followers when Free Talk Live brought me on. And when they brought Bonnie on, and when they brought Rich Paul, this is how things go. And the trolls in the Matrix chat that, you know, have a hard on for Mark. I don't know if I can say that. Well, I said it, and I'm not going to. But the trolls in the Matrix chat, they think Free Talk Live is, like, going downhill because it's no longer dominated by conservative libertarians, and it's more dominated by more liberal libertarians now.
Is that true, though?
It is. I mean, like, it's definitely true.
Like, how do we measure our listenership in that way?
No, it's not. It's the hosts that we're measuring, not the listeners. It's the hosts, right? The hosts are more liberal now.
Really? Am I more liberal? Am I more conservative? I don't know.
So, I mean, Mark isn't on the show very often, and Conan, of course, quit the show, and they were our more conservative voices.
Okay.
And Mark is still on the show a lot, obviously, but instead of Mark, you have more Aria and more Bonnie and Nikki, and none of us are leftists, right? The people on the right say I'm a leftist, but people on the left call me a Nazi. So
I get the opposite of that. I get people on the left wanting to identify with me, and then people on the right also wanting to identify with me.
Okay.
That's so weird, because usually there's like an opposition. It's like the lefties are going to be like, that guy's so far right, and the righties are going to be, that guy's so far left. But that's not the case. And I'm like, that's weird.
That is weird, because I get exactly the opposite, right?
I know that I come, like, my upbringing, I have several families, but, like, more of the families were sort of conservative Christian than weren't.
Okay.
And so that's, like, sort of the basis of my childhood. But then, you know, I left home, and I wandered the earth like Kane from Kung Fu, and I learned a bunch of stuff. And then I ended up in lefty paradise, Seattle, Washington,
right,
for 20 years. And so, like, did that have an influence on me? Absolutely. But I think that's what made me anarchist, philosophically, was experiencing both the far right and the far left, right, over a different period of my time. And then when it came time to examine it, I was like, I'm neither of those.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I I'm not a centrist either, because people are like, well, you're just in the middle, like most people. Most people, I think, are in the middle of left and right.
Well, then
right.
They need to read their Bibles.
And I'm like, yeah.
Because the middle sucks.
Yeah, I don't think most people are in the middle. I don't think centrism is a thing. I think that they're confusing not wanting to participate in a system of violence with being in the middle politically.
Right. I tend to be more toward anarchists, obviously, but I think I actually have a lot of my upbringing to thank for that, because, my mother was not a good parent, neither was my father. They were both terrible parents, drug addicts, you know, abusive. They weren't abusive toward me or each other, but my mom kept dating abusive men, and to my father's credit, he never beat my mother, never raised a hand to her, but a lot of drugs, a lot of just terrible parenting in general. But one of the earliest memories I have that deals with the government in any capacity was when my mother had taken us and we lived out in this house in the middle of nowhere, and the sheriff came up to take my sister and I, away from our mother.
Yeah.
And make us go live with our grandmother. This is not, I didn't want this.
Right.
My sister didn't want this. Our mom didn't want this. So who was this other entity,
right,
that was in charge of me that could,
yeah,
that could tell my actual mother, no, you don't get to make the decisions,
right,
here. And that, I think, predisposed me to question authority, because that made me ask, what gives them the right to take this crying child out of their mother's arms and send them elsewhere? What the hell gives them the right to do that?
Yeah. I had a similar experience as a child where my sister and I literally ran away from home, right, because the abuse was horrific.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I'm not wallowing in it or anything like that. It's
right.
Just a thing that happened. But we knew at the time as children that what was going on was wrong. So much so that we wanted to leave the situation. And so my sister, who's 3 years older than me, she was like, come on, we're getting out of here, right? And grabbed me by the hand, and we left, and we just started walking. We're in a residential neighborhood. I don't know how far we walked. We ended up at some people's house. We knocked on a door. They took us in, right? They listened to our story. They fed us dinner, you know, that kind of a thing. And then they called the cops, right? Because what else are you going to do? Some random kids show up running away from home, claiming abuse, right? What are they going to do, right? And we had no idea that this was going to happen. We just knew that we needed to get the F out of that situation.
Yeah.
And so they call the cops, and the cops take us down to the police station. And this is small-town Wisconsin stuff. So, like, there wasn't anything that I recall overtly frightening other than, like, you know, they got to buzz you in through the right door, and you can't get out if you wanted to go anyway, kind of a
thing.
That's
a terrible feeling, though, man.
But here's what happened.
Especially for claustrophobic.
The cops, of course, call the parental units, and the
naturally
parental units come down, and they chat about who knows what.
Oh, and, and they assure the cops that, oh, no, everything's fine. There's no abuse.
Cops sent us right back into the abusive situation.
God, man.
Didn't do a damn thing.
Similar stuff with me later on, like when my mother effectively kidnapped my sister and I. She was dating an abusive alcoholic who just beat the hell out of her. And on two occasions, it was so loud and so severe that the neighbors called the police. And on neither of those occasions did the police do anything.
Right.
And after, you know, a month of dealing with this, of hearing my mother choking and saying that she couldn't breathe and just having the crap beaten out of her, I went to the kitchen and I got two knives out of the kitchen drawer and shouted, Mom, I got a knife. Like, I was going to go stab this dude, right?
Yeah.
Me, little second grade Arya.
Yeah, you're trying to defend your mom.
Yeah, terrible idea, right? And I realized this very, very quickly that, you know, no, I put the knives back and I went and just laid and cried on the couch for the rest of the night. But, like, that was when I knew that the police weren't coming. The government wasn't coming. No one was coming. No help was coming.
Yeah.
I was on my own. And that was a terrible experience. But in hindsight, something like that provides valuable life experience.
It does, yeah.
Knowing that I was on my own, that this is a problem I can't solve, and as a second grader, there's nothing I can do to solve that problem. But I guess that in itself is its own interesting life lesson, that there are some things you just can't change, right?
Well, and I think, too, when it comes to libertarianism, voluntarism, anarchy, whatever the words are we're using to describe people who are of a mind of freedom, folks who realize that the state is an organization of evil, I think that many of them come to the philosophies of freedom after they've experienced some sort of attack by the state. And so for most folks, that doesn't happen until, like, later in life, right? There's a whole bunch of folks who grow up, right? They rarely interact with the government outside of, like, oh, I got to pay my taxes, or, oh, I got a speeding ticket or a parking ticket, that kind of thing. Those are their interactions, and a lot of people are limited to those interactions only for a long period of time. Until they got to do something like, you know, I don't know, buy a house or pay some taxes, or, you know, there's some eminent domain thing, or some other attack from the state wakes them up and go and makes them go, wait a minute, what? Where did they get the right to do this? How come they're able to do this? How come, you know, I thought that the government was X. It was here to protect us and defend us and prevent, you know, people from taking our stuff and you know, damaging other people. And they don't realize that that is not the case until the state attacks them. And I think that, you know, if you and I have a similarity, it's that we learned that as a child.
Sounds like it.
Now, I didn't, like, internalize it as a child.
No, certainly not. I didn't either.
I didn't go, well, I hate the state now, right, when I was five or whatever, however old I was.
No, I resisted authority, and I questioned authority, and I suspect you did as well.
Ever since that time.
Yeah.
Because I knew, I was upset that these people who, you know, even at that young age, I had believed were the people who were supposed to help.
Yep.
And they didn't.
Yeah. And they don't.
Yeah.
So, interesting ways to become libertarians. I mean, this sucks, but this is why I don't necessarily look at, you know, my childhood experience as negative. Or, I mean, sure, there was plenty of negative stuff.
Oh, I was totally negative.
Yeah, but on the whole, like, I am who I am today because of those experiences. And all of that abuse that my mother endured, it ultimately led to some positive things, right? Like, I hate domestic violence.
Right, yeah.
And that's, in and of itself, that's not unusual. We should hate domestic violence.
Right.
You should get angry anytime someone introduces violence to their relationship, non-consensual violence to their relationship. Sure. But for me, if I have a trigger, it's pretty close to that. Like, one time I was delivering pizzas and to some apartment, and in the next door apartment, this husband and wife were just banging and yelling crap at each other. I just couldn't take it. Knocked on the door. I was like, hey, yeah. Don't know what's going on here. Don't care.
Yeah.
Calm down. Little things like that.
And yeah.
That, I think, is a positive development. Something like that where one can... I'm not a domestic violence advocate, right? Or advocate against domestic violence or whatever.
You advocate for domestic violence?
But,
that's weird.
And due to those experiences, I've also never really had any major drug problems, right? I've seen what drug addicts do, and I've seen how these people become drug addicts.
I'm actually surprised that... Well, I'm alive, really. Like, based on my past as a child, the things that have happened to me don't happen to people, and then they become well-adjusted individuals as adults, right? It's not very frequent that those things occur. I could have ended up in prison. I could have ended up a junkie. I could have ended up both, right? And I didn't. And why, I can't really tell you. I can't put my finger on, you know, what prevented that. I did plenty of drugs. I was a rebellious youth, right? You know, all of those things that happen, you know, to children of abuse happened, but for whatever reason, I escaped the worst of it.
Well, congrats on that.
And I'm glad for that. And if anything, one of the many reasons that I do stuff like Free Talk Live is so that other people don't have to experience that. Like, I'm attempting to share my experiences with the world so that you can learn from somebody else's past without having to go through it yourself.
That would be ideal, right? I mean, because I never really give any thought why I talk, before I was doing Free Talk Live, I was making videos. I started my own podcast called Rantings and Ravings, like way back when I lived in Mississippi. I've always interested in creating some sort of content.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. Like, what am I trying to accomplish here? I honestly don't know. But that would be a good goal, right? Is preventing someone from having to make the mistakes I made. Or in my case, I think telling them that, like, there's hope. It will change. It doesn't matter what it's like for you right now. You know, give it some time. It will change. Things will get better.
Or even that it's possible. Like, the situation that you're in right now might be just heinous and unbearable and all that kind of thing, but it is possible for you to get out of that situation.
Yeah.
It is possible for you to outgrow that situation. And you touched on something a little bit earlier, too. Consent, right? As a child, consent is sort of innate. You understand it. You're like, I didn't give you permission to do that. You know, why are you doing this? You're wronging me, right? It's understood fundamentally as a child. And then people sort of, they seem to outgrow that. They seem to forget what consent is. But if you just take the word consent, and I know the left is real big on consent, right? That's one of their, they're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. When it comes to,
with everything except the government, they're big on it, yeah.
Right, yeah. When it comes to, you know, sicking the government on people or making laws for other people, they're real big on the word consent. Well, if they take that and just apply it logically to every area of their life, you realize that the state, that is the organization commonly known as government, exists in violation of consent.
Yeah, and, you know, I would point out to them that I don't consent to it, and they go, well, blah, 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 blah. But no, put that I don't consent to being ruled by the U.S. government.
Right, or anybody for that matter. I'm perfectly capable of ruling myself.
But only the U.S. government claims to have the authority to rule over me. And they're like, well, yes, but you live in a society. No, I was born here. Society lives around me.
Right.
Right. A society is something that you choose to join.
Right.
What we have here isn't a society. It's being press ganged. This, you people press ganged me into joining service on your ship and then said, if I disobey your captain, I'm going to be put in the brig. And then because I did disobey, no other crime, but I disobeyed the captain, I'm going to the brig in 10 days. I got press ganged into this. I didn't choose to join this. I didn't go, man, that ship looks great. Let me join it. Like I did with the Shire Society or Free Talk Live.
Right.
Those are actual, well, Free Talk Live is not a society, but Shire Society is an actual society. It's something that has these characteristics, and you look at it and you say, I want to join that.
Yeah.
There's nothing. People like to say we live in a society or whatever. What exactly is good about this situation where you press gank people into joining, or where you don't give them a choice, where you say, join our society, obey us, or die? And that's ultimately the line that they're drawing.
Absolutely.
They have all of these obfuscations around it, but the reality is that if the police tell you to do something and you don't do it, they will use any force necessary to make you to obey, up to and including killing you.
Yeah, and then there's people who are like, well, you don't like it, why don't you leave? It's like, okay, well, let's apply that analogy, right? You've been press ganged onto a pirate ship, right? Do you think the captain of that pirate ship, you know, the guy with the hook or whatever, he'd be like, ah, if you don't like this ship, why don't you join another ship?
Well, you're out in the ocean. Not gonna happen. And here, there's nowhere you can go that isn't claimed by one government or another.
Boom.
It's not like you can just go. There's more coming up here from Fort Fest. It is Free Talk Live.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
U.S. USA News update. More than a dozen people are injured after a city bus crashed into an apartment building in Baltimore Saturday morning. A total of 17 people were hurt. None of the injuries appear to be life-threatening. President Biden is calling the reopening of Interstate 95 in Northeast Philadelphia the most important project in the country right now. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro announced I-95 can reopen in 2 weeks. A majority of black Americans believe racism will get worse during their lifetime. That's according to a new poll by The Washington Post and Ipsos. It found 51% of black Americans expect racism to get worse in the country, while just 11% think it will get better. Former Trump attorney Michael Cohen is being denied a bid for early release from probation. Cohen pled guilty to several charges in 2018, including criminal tax evasion and campaign finance violations. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com. That's advertise at gcnlive.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It is Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
On June the 7th is the day that you're listening to this. Because we just wrapped up a wedding, if you're listening to this, and it was probably beautiful and a lot of fun, and I don't think I used the candles to set anything accidentally on fire. I believe the pavilion is still standing.
Wait, there's candles involved?
There are candles involved. It's a candle lighting. It's a hand-binding / candle lighting ceremony,
okay.
Right? Which... I knew what a hand binding ceremony was, right? And it's a type of wedding where
they... Is that like when you try to do the, what do they call it? When you're trying to race with another person and they tie both your legs together and put it in like a burlap sack?
Sort of, except they don't race, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's their hands instead. I think it's an Irish tradition thing. Huh. I don't remember. Someone does it though, and you know, you clasp hands and they bind them together, whereas Americans customarily kiss. Oh, God, that bug. We are at Rogers Campground, obviously.
There are insects at the campground. It is true.
The good news is I killed that one. He was biting the top of my foot, man, and that is like one of the worst places to get bitten by anything.
I don't know how it happened, but somehow I have a bug bite on the top of my bald skull. But it doesn't itch, at least not yet. And so now it's just a bump. It's almost as if like I had bumped my head and didn't know about it.
I don't want to suggest that bugs are really a problem. That's the first time I've been bitten, and I've been out here all day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, bugs aren't, and you have one bite on you. bugs aren't, they're here. We are at a campground. We are in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. And keep in mind, bringing a hoodie. I think the first year I came to ForkFest, I neglected to bring a hoodie. And
yeah.
I regretted that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't think it's been down to like 30 in the last few years, but it can get down into the 30s. It can get pretty cold here. And even now during the day, it's only like 73, 74 degrees in the middle of June. This whole winter, and I mean this whole summer in New Hampshire has been relatively cool. It's been very weird, very perplexing.
So far, yeah. We had that one like week where we had a couple of 90 degree days.
Yeah, God, that was brutal.
And I was thinking then, I'm like, oh, summer's going to be brutal. And then it wasn't.
Nope.
At least so far.
2 years ago, I think it was, or maybe it was last year.
We still got to do August, so, you know, August is generally the brutal month.
I got so tired, like, this was early, in, like, June. I got so hot and so sick of it that I went to a hardware store and bought an 18,000 BTU air conditioner.
Ooh.
To throw in my house.
That'll do it, though.
Yeah, and, oh, it's panic. It
That'll
rocks.
Do it, yeah.
It's
when I,
gorgeous.
The one that
I love
bought,
that AC.
The one that I bought for my we'll call it my apartment. It's like 800 square feet or something, right? 14,000 BTU, and it completely takes care of the whole place. So, yeah, if you can get over 10,000 BTUs on your air conditioner, that's going to do the trick.
It was between a 15,000 one and this 18,000 one. It may even be a 20,000 BTU. I don't remember now.
Either way.
But, yeah, anything over 10,000 is going to do the trick. But it was like $700, but it was so worth it.
Yeah.
And that was in early June. It was just so hot. I bought air conditioners for almost every room of the house. Then I put one in the upstairs bathroom where I never put a bathroom.
Yeah.
One of the bedrooms in my house just had no one in it. I still opened that up, threw an air conditioner in there, and turned it on and kept that door open because it was hot.
Yeah.
It was unbelievably hot. And this year, like I barely turned the air conditioners on. And it's June. Like, I go out at night to play with my dog, and I grab a hoodie still. Like,
yeah.
In Keene, where not up here in the White Mountains, it was actually warmer last night than I would have expected. But still, it's grabbing a hoodie to go play fetch with her here in June. And I asked my sister, I was like, hey, what's the weather like down there in Mississippi? And she's like, I'm dying. It's 97 degrees or whatever. I'm like, man, that sucks. Our summer is actually pretty mild and nice, and I actually kind of like it.
Yeah. It's certainly good for camping weather. It's good for a gathering of freedom-minded individuals.
It is, and that is what's happening here at the here at Rogers Campground. It is ForkFest right now, which means that this is the decentralized alternative to the Porcupine Freedom Festival. It's not an alternative anymore, and we should probably retire that particular terminology. It's more the decentralized
pre-funk.
Yeah, it was the pre-party, and then it was the after-party, and now it's the pre-party again. But it's never really been, only 1 year I think it was the alternative, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, the Porcupine Freedom Festival. And this was such a weird thing when Dennis Pratt was on. He kept saying that ForkFest used to be something that just happened at the bottom of the hill, and now it's ForkFest is the entire campground. And that's the opposite of how it's actually played out. ForkFest used to be the entire campground. Like, you used to have to pass park rangers and show them your bracelet and stuff to get into the campground.
Yeah.
And you couldn't rent a campground from Rogers. You had to get it through the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Right, yeah.
And they rented the entire campground out. And there would be pork rangers riding golf carts all up and down the place. It was disgusting. They were tyrants. So
yeah.
They would yell at people for having something out in the road, like Azria's leash, if it was partial in the road. They would stop and yell, berate you for that. They were tyrants. The pork rangers were last year was the ForkFest pre-party. I remember walking around with Ian talking to... Who was it? I don't remember who we were talking about. Ian and I had just walked around the entire campsite, and I went back to the hotel room to get something.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, was I outside smoking? I don't remember what I was doing. But I heard the head pork ranger then complaining over her radio or on her cell phone to someone about how she wanted to do something, but she didn't have jurisdiction. because this wasn't Porkfest yet. It was still Forkfest. And like,
oh, wow.
That's how Porkfest jumped the shark, man. They were crazy.
Yeah.
They were, at one point, they searched people's vehicles looking for Christopher Cantwell. And that was the, I knew by then that Porkfest was already crazy, but that was like the nail in the coffin. And then all during Porkfest, everything was fine. Everyone got along just great. But immediately the night before Porkfest, there were the golf carts everywhere, riding all up and down the streets. I'm trying to walk here. I can't because there's a golf cart parked in the middle of the street because some pork ranger decided to stop and talk to someone. It was that sort of entitled, unnecessary behavior. And that was throughout the entire campground. So when Dennis says that Porkfest used to be something that happened at the bottom of the hill, no, Porkfest was the entire campground. And you couldn't get in unless you had... I don't remember exactly how it works out, but it was the whole thing.
You can't get in unless you've paid.
And since then, they decentralized. Like, all of the vendor spots had to be reserved through the Porcupine Freedom Festival, through the Free State Project. And that created this huge mess where the fees were too high, and then they were very controlling. So all of the vendors closed down shop, and they moved several rows over to get off of Agora Valley, where Porkfest was tyrannical, and they started just doing their own thing.
Sure.
And ultimately, they realized that their fees and their tyrannical behavior wasn't working, so they were just going to let the vendors sort it out for themselves. And they decided that, in general, they were just going to let people sort out the campgrounds themselves. And Porkfest, since then, has been something that happens at the bottom of the hill. And we said this, I want to say it was 3 years ago, that Porkfest was the entire campground, because we claimed it. And Porkfest, the Porcupine Freedom Festival, was something that happened down there at the bottom of the hill. That's what the pavilion is. And you do have to have your wristband to get into the pavilion, but not to the rest of the campground. In theory, if you're here, you should have a Porcupine Freedom Festival ticket. Not exactly sure how all of that works, right? Yeah. And that's been part of a dispute between Dennis and I from like 2 years ago when he accused us of being like drunken teenagers telling people to sneak in or something. It was all very, very bizarre, but Porkfest has changed a lot, and it's worth attending. If you got sick of the tyranny that you were seeing, you know, 5 years ago, it's changed.
It has,
Give it another shot, and I promise you, you will see the difference. You don't have to check in with security as you enter the campground anymore. You don't have to worry about a pork ranger running you over in their golf cart.
And, you know, to the extent that the Porcupine Freedom Festival is 20 years now, right, it has grown.
Yeah.
Right. And by grown, I mean matured, not just like, oh, there's more people that come now. No, I'm not even talking about that kind of growth. I'm talking about the people that have been coming for 20 years. Not only have they grown, but the attitude of the entire festival has grown because, you know, there are more and more people moving to New Hampshire, more and more people coming to the philosophies of freedom and individuality and voluntarism than ever before. And so with that, of course, a festival is going to mature over 20 years. Why wouldn't it?
The only thing I'm not completely sold on is why does the Free State Project get Porkfest anyway, right? I'm not a big fan of intellectual property and all of that stuff, but, like, why did the institutional organization get to claim and run Porkfest? To my mind, in hindsight, we should have just always called Forkfest the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Mm.
Because the Porcupine Freedom Festival predates the Free State Project, right?
Does it?
I'm pretty sure it does. Mm. But it was happening here at least before they had picked a place to move, right? The very first year, it was just some libertarians hanging out here. And then the next year, they did it again, and there were more libertarians. And the next year, there were even more. And at some point, the Free State Project incorporated and decided that it was going to start running the Porcupine Freedom Festival. And it grew, and no doubt, the Free State Project did a great job with it. But their power also grew.
Yeah.
And as such, you know, a lot of people became intoxicated with the power. And I've seen this with a few different organizers. As far as I can tell, Carla's the only person who I've seen who organized the Porcupine Freedom Festival that never did anything that anyone said was tyrannical, right? And, I mean, obviously, we're libertarians. So every libertarian out there says every other libertarian is not a real libertarian. That's not what I mean, right? I mean that Every other organizer has been at the helm when something very controversial was done that could be fairly described as authoritarian,
sure,
or
yeah.
authoritative, rather.
Yeah.
Like, when the Paxtons were in charge, Ian got banned. And while they were just doing that on behalf of the Free State Project Board or whatever, they were the ones who did it. If this was my first year, so I'm hazy on all of this.
Yeah.
But I do remember the Paxtons were in charge that year, and the, you know, they were the ones who organized it. And then Carla Garrett took it over, and I don't remember anything like that happening.
Yeah.
And she did it, I think, 2 years in a row, and then Dennis Pratt took over. And for a few years, I don't recall anyone having any major issue. This is his third year. Last year was supposed to be his last year, but they couldn't find anyone to do it this year, or why ever he chose to do it. Now he's doing it again this year.
Okay.
And this year, of course, there have been countless controversies around the Free State Project, I mean, around the Porcupine Freedom Festival, more than I've ever seen. A lot of them unnecessary. And again, I want to reiterate that I don't think banning anyone is the way to go. I don't think boycotting the festival is the way to go. I think if you don't want to go see Robert F. Kennedy, which I'm right there with you, I don't want to go see him either.
I'm not going to go.
I've heard a lot of people say, well, yeah, but given he's got two family members who were assassinated by the deep state. Look, man, that's like suggesting that because I'm going to prison, you should ask my uncle what he has to say, right? Like,
yeah.
Being related to me doesn't give him any insight into anything.
It's so weird that everybody jumps to that, right?
Right.
Because there were JFK and the conspiracy and all that kind of stuff. But, like, he had nothing to do with any of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, yeah, but it was his uncle or whatever. Like, yeah, but he doesn't have any. They're like, but he thinks it was a conspiracy. So, but he doesn't know anything more about it than we do.
Right.
So, like, it's meaningless to me. And I get it. You know, it's a good. Just like Jeb Bush or George W. Bush, they had the claim to fame of their father being president. That's all it is to me, is he's popular because he had. But if you don't want to go see him, don't boycott the Porcupine Freedom Festival. If you don't want to go to the gun-free zone, don't boycott the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Right.
Come to the Porcupine Freedom Festival and then stand here giving him the finger
yeah.
from up here at the Hill because you refuse to comply with his demands.
I don't know if there's anything official, but I do expect some protest to
really?
Occur. Yeah. I've heard tell of people who don't agree with the disarming of people in order to go see this particular politician speak. And so they're going to stand outside near as they can get and protest, maybe hold a sign or something.
Okay.
I don't know if there's anything official, but that's just what I heard.
Well, libertarians will do that, right?
And I, like,
I'm looking forward
I
to
expect
covering that.
If that doesn't happen, I will be disappointed with, you know, Pork Fest in general. If there isn't somebody out there, like, you know, protesting the gun-free zone in order to hear a frickin' politician lie to us, then I will be disappointed.
I suspect there will be people protesting. I don't know how I've... I mean, as long as they're not disruptive, I guess it's fine. Well, obviously, I have no control over it anyway, so if they're disruptive, that's got nothing to do with me.
Right.
But I would rather people protest peacefully and not be disruptive. But make yourselves known, and I think... Ignore the guy. Make it clear that you're not listening, that you don't care what he has to say, and that he's just some politician who's here and no one really cares. There is one politician here who I would be interested... I say there's one politician here. If you Google me, it pops up that I'm a politician.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I mean,
because you ran for something.
Right.
Yeah.
So keeping that in perspective, that most of the libertarians that actually live in New Hampshire here are quote-unquote politicians.
Sure.
When I say politician, you know what I mean, though. I don't mean people like me or Ian or
talking about
whoever.
Career politicians.
Right.
People who do this for
you.
Their job.
There is one among them who I actually would like to have on Free Talk Live, and that's Tulsi Gabbard. And that's one to make Mark happy. Mark likes Tulsi Gabbard. I'm pretty sure he would like some risque pictures of Tulsi Gabbard. However, I...
Then if that's true, then perhaps Mark should invite her and come here and interview her.
Well, you would think that Mark would come here in order to say, I'm not sure it's official that she's going to be here, and I haven't actually looked. But I know there was rumors that she was going to come. But anyway, the only reason I'm interested in talking to her, she's a liar, just like all the others,
yeah.
And she's going to change her positions, just like all the others. She's going to do whatever is politically expedient. However, she is anti-war, and she has consistently been anti-war. And I want to ask her on the air, if she would pardon. She also did say, if I recall correctly, that she would pardon Ross Ulbricht.
Ooh.
I think she did. Someone asked her that, and I want to say she answered yes, but I may be wrong. Anyway, I want to ask her that, and I would like to talk to her about her anti-war positions and things like that. I would talk to her.
I wouldn't have as much of a, I'm going to say problem. I don't have a problem with somebody, you know, inviting a politician du jour to come and speak, and if people want to go see him, it's their choice. I don't have a problem with really any of that. What I do have a problem with is that it seems like it's going to be a one-way, it's going to be a speech, and that any questions that are asked are not going to be live. They're going to have that, like, they put up a thing, like, what questions would you like to ask Mr. RFK?
Really?
Yeah. I saw that on the social media, and people were submitting questions.
No way.
So the questions that are going to be asked of this guy are going to be canned and pre-approved by not only whoever put up the poll, but, you know, I'm sure RFK's staff as well, and his campaign manager, and, you know, it's got to go through all those channels. So,
oh, that's gross.
The questions, near as I can tell, unless something changes and this isn't playing out the way I expect it to, it's a one-way conversation with some canned questions at the end, and I would much prefer, if you're a politician and you want to find out what the Porcupine Freedom Festival or Forkfest is all about, you just show up.
Yep.
You just show up and, like, okay, bring your armed security. We don't care, because guess what?
Not at all.
We're all our own armed security as well. So you'd fit right in. You know, maybe we'd have a talk about, hey, why do you use that gun? Why do I use this gun? You know, that kind of a stuff. Hang out with us. Be part of the festival. Don't come here and preach to us, right? Because we know more about freedom than you do.
What I would like to see, and now that I think about it, I mean, obviously, RFK is going to take some limo or something directly down there to the pavilion. He's not going to walk there from up here. You know, he's going to get tripping down there. He's got people for that. And he's going to get on. He's going to go into the pavilion and do his little speech. I would love, while they drive down Agoura Valley here, for on both sides of the road to just be libertarians armed, just standing there. Waiting backs to him, right?
That'd be nice.
Like, as he just drives by. Like, because you're going to drive by a lot of armed libertarians to get to the pavilion anyway. So what if they put on a show?
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, man, you're on our territory now. Yeah. I bet he would just keep going. He would hit that circle, and he would just keep going. That would be my guess, because that would be intimidating if you weren't a libertarian. Like me, I would never feel safer. At James Bass party a few years ago, the Reformed Satanic Church sponsored, there were all sorts of, you know, they called them Boogaloo Boys. They were all over the place. And, like, I had never been safer than I was right then. Everyone there was armed. Everyone knew how to use their arms, and everything was totally fine. But I'm a libertarian, so I expect that sort of thing. But a career politician? Another one I'm not interested in is Vivek. And this is because
I know nothing about that guy. The only reason I've heard that name is because of the, you know, we'll call it the drama around the Porcupine Freedom Festival this year.
That's all I know about it, too, other than what he said on Twitter. He wants to start a hot war with the Mexican drug cartels. Like,
no.
This is nuts, right? And there are people who call themselves libertarians making apologies for this, saying, well, have you listened to what he really has to say? No. He explicitly said he wants to make war with the drug cartels. I'm not going to hear him out beyond that. I don't give my ear to warmongers, and I don't think any libertarian should. The moment they say they want to initiate a war is the moment the libertarians should stop listening.
Right, yeah.
Not hear them out.
Yeah. And, like, the mess that people, society, is in because of statism is not going to be remedied by just electing the right guy.
That's true.
It's just we're too far gone from that. You're not going to find, even if you found somebody completely 100% principled, and you were able to get them on a ticket, and you were able to win the election, once they got in, they're not going to be able to present 100% according to their philosophies, their principles, because statism is the antithesis of principle.
Yeah, there's this whole administrative state that Jeffrey Tucker talked about last year of the Brownstone Institute. He'll be on, I'm sure, this year. He's on with us every year, so we'll catch him at some point and get him on. But he gave a speech last year about this administrative state and about how the president, you would expect the president to be in charge of it, but in reality, various laws passed by Congress basically give tenure to some of these bureaucrats. And the president can't just go in and fire the whole Department of Education or Homeland Security or whatever and then replace them with libertarians. He literally can't do that. So electing even Ron Paul as president isn't going to solve anything. You're not going to vote away the administrative state that was not created by voting in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's silly to think that you could. And Vivek's going to be here. RFK is going to be here. My biggest concern with all of this, though, are the wide-eyed libertarians, not the ones here in New Hampshire. I suspect the ones here in New Hampshire don't really care about these guys. But the rest of them, the ones coming here from Michigan and Tennessee and whatever, they feel like, the Libertarian Party is becoming legitimate. Big name politicians are coming to speak at our festival, and we're the big boys now. Without any actual, I would love to see a poll done on that topic, to find out which percentage of the libertarians who are happy about RFK and Vivek are not from New Hampshire.
Yeah, well, and
because in New Hampshire we're used to the major parties like coming to us.
The system has a way of taking people who oppose it, figuring out how to get them caught up in the churn of statism, and then figuring out how to make them part of statism so that they become part of the problem that they were originally trying to eradicate. People get a little taste of like either fame or power, right? Because politics provides both.
Yeah.
Right? They get a little taste of it and they're, I want more. Right. If you have any sort of psychopathic tendency, like it's just going to happen. The system will not take somebody of noble intent and allow them to remain noble. It's just not possible.
And if they actually have noble intent and will remain noble, like to his credit, Ron Paul did, Lou Rockwell letters aside, which was something else I wanted to mention earlier. You mentioned that most people, They don't have an issue with the state because they never run afoul of the state. And this is something that Lou Rockwell wrote in one of his books. He's got a lot of problems, right? But he writes some good stuff.
I've read some of his stuff. I enjoyed some of it.
I think it was called The Rise of Fascism or something. He wrote exactly that the Americans allow their government to persist because they're in denial. They're allowed to be in denial about what it actually is because they never have to come face-to-face with the fascism of the American government. Almost no one gets pulled over on some back road at 3 o'clock in the morning and harassed and insulted and wrongfully arrested. That doesn't happen to very many people. And it happens rarely enough that most people don't get worked up about it.
Yeah.
Most people are like, that never happened to me, or you shouldn't have been doing something wrong, or whatever nonsense, until their kid is the one getting arrested for having some Xanax that his friend gave him or something.
Yeah.
And then they're opposed to fascism. But we are out of time for tonight, and I've got to go rehearse a wedding, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But we're here tonight, tomorrow night. Come hang out with us here at Pork Fest. We're here until June the 18th, and then the Porcupine Freedom Festival kicks off. So we'll see you then. It's Free Talk Live.
It's all too obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. American families are talking about a future of food shortages, banks failing, society breaking down, and what seems like the setup for the apocalypse. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are leaning into self-reliance, investing in emergency food storage now more than ever. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, has made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on their best-selling 3-month emergency food kit. You get tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200 plus get free shipping on 3-month emergency food kits at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare for what we all know is coming. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. and I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.